Good morning, Mark, and welcome back to the show.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. So there has been a rapid change in the attitude towards the use of animals in our diet, particularly this year. Why do you think that has spiked so significantly?
I think it's a number of reasons that come up. Basically, there's just generally more awareness. I think the social media has had a big play in that, in terms of people communicating ideas. We've seen advents of films like Cowspiracy, which deals with the relationship between animals and the environment, and another film by the same makers, I think, called What the Health, which deals with the health aspects, and more recently, the Australian classic film Dominion, which is a good insight into what happens to the animals themselves. And I think a lot of these things come into play. And the other fact is, I think, if you actually look at our time span, 10 years ago, environment was number one concern, and then it dropped down. And now it's sort of J-curving back up. And a lot of the information that's gone out here has become consolidated. But still, it's hard to get across the idea that people, after fossil fuels, what we eat, animal agriculture, is basically, particularly, is the second largest contributor to greenhouse gases.
Yeah, it definitely is. From what I've read as well, I guess that's the main thing being put forward, is that the farms and animal agriculture is a massive contributor. So, and Australia, along with many other Western countries, is reducing its reliance on animal-based food. But I guess as a effect, many farmers and the economy is being affected as a result. What can we do to reduce that impact on their livelihood?
This becomes part and problem in itself, because we've seen the pictures of the farmers doing it hard in the drought, but what they're actually producing in terms of the cattle and sheep are fundamentally methane producers. And this is a dilemma, because we didn't think about these things when these industries were getting established, and it was all to do with our obsession with protein and where we get protein. And so the animal model, it's stayed loomed large and become so great now that it's really corporate in many cases. I think we have to, whether we like it or not, eventually move to dry climate crops like millet, for instance, and other things. Develop the Ord River, you know, perhaps look at, instead of pumping sewage out to seas, get it back inland and try to make our deserts green again, because we are going to be feeling the effects, particularly in the driest continent here in Australia. Give you an idea of just how much land is used. It's 75% is basically used for agriculture. That's as big as 75% could be saved by resorting to plant-based growth rather than actually animals. This is the size of US, China, the European Union, Australia combined. And you've got to recognise too, it's not just the environment where it's facing the crisis, it's actually the loss of species. We've lost about 60% of our species since 1970. And that's to do with very large, not only human encroachment for habitation, but also the encroachment of forest destruction and use of lands for animal agriculture as well. It's done a lot to contribute to that, either from animals directly or growing the food for animals. And you're looking at incredible amounts of animals, grain direct, I think 80%, yeah. One third of world cereal harvest is fed to animals. That's all the legumes and soybeans, etc. So we're losing we're having a protein conversion rate, which is like negative, which is not a good thing, and certainly not sustainable.
No, definitely not. The scale, as you said, is absolutely massive. And I guess the alternative is a lot better in terms of plant-based farming and all that other kind of stuff. We'd be able to feed millions of other humans as well around the world if we did that. But I guess the really tough thing is these people's livelihood. I guess they've known how to, these cattle farms, I guess, in particular, to work on those their whole lives. How can we help them transition into, a different culture of farming?
Well, I think that because of the money going to be saved by making action now, just as it is on turning towards renewables, we can look at it as a form of renewable farming, if you like. It's better to give them subsidies to help them out to move into those foods for the future. Because it's a bit like, you know, the cliff edge is there. We can do all we like, but we can do the same thing. We've got to divert. We've got to make the changes. That's through subsidies, retraining, or getting people. And farmers are pretty adaptable. I've got a cousin actually does a lot of variety of things, and he can switch. Just makes the decision. It might require our farm equipment. Well, we get that tax breaks for that. But unless we act like that, it's really hard. It's just people, you know, so often people are caught up in this situation, and we're so reliant on the farm traditionally. We've just got to change the farming methods and become more efficient. What we grow and how we distribute it.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see that all unfold. I guess getting to plant-based diets, on a bit of a side note, I'm reading Osher Ginsberg's biography, which is Osher Ginsberg's the host of the Bachelor and the Bachelorette and all that kind of stuff. He's completely vegan. He's been living on a vegan diet for years. And I guess one of his big things is he was living in LA for a couple of years, and they have a massive amount of vegan and vegetarian kind of cafes and stores, which really helps people get into that, frame of mind and weighing to eat. Whereas here in Sydney, and I'm sure many other places around Australia, it's quite difficult to remain in that vegan diet reasonably easy. So what are your thoughts on, I guess, changing a few of the menus really in Sydney and all that kind of stuff in restaurants and cafes?
Oh yeah, well look, that has rapidly changed. I remember, I can give you an example, when I first went vegetarian nearly 30 odd years ago, 37 years ago actually, there was an Indian restaurant with one meal on the curry which didn't have meat in it. And that was a totally westernized, because in India, of course, the other way around, if at all. And so we've seen massive change and new things have come on. There are big companies, even meat companies, now investing in plant-based alternatives. There's a burger called the Beyond Burger and Beyond Meat. And believe it or not, about 85% of the consumers of the Beyond Meat burger, I think they're available in our supermarkets as well, are meat eaters. They actually like the texture, they get the idea that there's probably health benefits and environmental benefits, and they can still get the taste. So once you reach a critical mass, of course, what becomes popular stays popular, and I think this is what we're moving into, and I think that's hit that mass in this, certainly this year. And I don't think it's a fad, I think it's really well grounded. It's grounded on those three principles of environment, health and animals, basically animal rights or animal welfare, that people are, and they're locking those into in very solidly now, and they see that that's their contribution. So as far as, this is the beauty of this, of course, that you don't have to wait for governments to act or get involved in politics. It's what you choose to put on your plate 1, 2, 3 times a day, or any of those choices affects right down the line. Even small amounts, you know, weren't multiplied over millions and millions of people is extraordinary. It's like when people go into, you know, used to go into a supermarket and get one plastic bag. Well, you probably multiply that by 1 million for the population of Sydney. Say there's a family of four.
Yeah.
Everything adds up. And it's just that consciousness.
All it takes is just one person going, oh, it's just one more plastic bag. But I'm sure that's times by, you know, another million people going, oh, it's just one more. So that really adds up. I guess around plastic waste, do you think that the concern around plastic waste entering our food systems and the ocean has actually eclipsed other 2018 stories like warming and catastrophic weather events as well?
I think it's part of it. I think it's a subset of that. Imagine a Venn diagram. You've got this bit of about the plastics moving into it. And there's an interesting connection there, certainly with the fishing industry, because most what they tell you while we're trying to save the world from plastic straws, most of the plastic in the marine environment is actually in the marine environment, and it's actually discarded fishing nets, which are trapping a lot of the unintended wildlife, marine life. So they're, you know, drowning and getting caught up in that, and as well as ingesting it. But by far the greatest majority is actually from discarded fishing vessels, because out in the ocean, of course, it's a law unto itself. There's no one to monitor things. And this is a real problem. So we need a real culture change. So this is the unfortunate connection between the fishing industry and the environment, but still another one to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's pretty much what it is. It's just a culture change. And if, I guess, people are getting worried and things like that, it's just, I guess, they have to think about the benefits that will come from changing the ways that we do things every day. And it's not going to be horribly changing into our lives. It's just going to be a few simple things that are just going to make a real massive impact.
That's exactly right. And basically, when you try something and you get into it and you learn more about it, which I encourage people to do, never take me or anyone else for that matter for granted, but do the research, look at those films, check online, you'll find that. But the psychological benefits are actually, yes, I am doing what I can, and not just lying. You know, it's actually a much more psychologically beneficial to become an activist, if you like. If you ever thought about activism, I say, if you ever thought about being an activist, stop thinking. Now's the time to get out there and do something.
Yeah,
doesn't matter what it is, basically. But we, you know, we're all in this together. There's no question. And this is a critical time. And as a species, we're not used to being in this sort of concept. We really have to change. There's no longer an enemy in the sense of a foreign country. The enemy, in a sense, is us and what we're doing, and probably our governments as well. But governments are only going to react when people react.
Absolutely. And it's a big collective issue that can really bring us together. A lot of positive could come from this. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mark. It's always nice to talk to you.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.